From an internet fraught with danger, three heroes brave the void to bring you the Digital and Dice Podcast.
This is the Digital and Dice Podcast for Monday, March 12th, 2018.
18?
18. And show 18? Number 140 is Go.
I'm High your host, Explosive.
Mark Boutet.
And I'm Insert Brian here.
And I'm the one called Justin.
Yes, indeed, and welcome to the Digital and Dice Podcast, where
you skipped a thing. It's supposed to be introduced guest, if applicable.
It's not applicable. We don't have a guest currently.
I haven't been here for 2 weeks. I'm reading things literally.
Thanks. I believe Sound Guy Steven is currently out and about.
Welcome to the show.
So he is not going to be around today.
Are we not doing that?
Welcome to the show.
I keep doing that.
Welcome to the show.
What have we been up to lately?
Played lately? Right, no, yeah, thanks for just reading the shtick specifically.
Well, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and start off because I'm out of control.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kingslayer. Yes, I am indeed Brian, even without a beard. It's...
Yeah, for those of you who are listening to the podcast audio...
you are formerly...
You're missing
Brian
out on voiceover guy Brian no longer having a beard and looking like a 12-year-old in a hoodie and cabby hat.
Oh, boy!
Well, you monster.
I mean, a really sickly 12-year-old.
You're
with, like,
a
some,
monster.
Some glandular problems, maybe, but...
Okay.
It's okay. I'll grow into my face.
Brian, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been playing more Magic the Gathering.
Uh-huh. You have a problem.
Yeah,
I do have a problem. I've even put up a Magic
Second
the Gathering...
Second Home Loan...
Like, poster.
Your kidneys are now for sale.
In my cubicle at work. So that's been a lot of fun, actually. Mm-hmm. I've been having a lot of fun deck building again, which is great. I love deck building. I've also been playing some Monster Hunter.
Yep.
Got on last night and was playing with our buddy McMindflayer and Mark over here.
It was good times.
They were helping me catch up because, well, work week means I don't really have that much time to play video games.
That's fair.
Yeah.
What have you been up to, Mark?
Let's see. Lately, it has been...
And we're out of time.
Yeah. Let's see. Lately, it's been Monster Hunter. Started a new job, so my schedule's been a bit mussed up, which means there haven't been daily streams, but we're going to be getting back to a good streaming schedule here soon, so thank you for sticking with us. Definitely keep a lookout for our Twitch and our YouTube announcements as we do some streaming coming up.
Yeah.
Let's see. Monster Hunter, I played... Good Lord, what did I just play? I played something. I did a thing.
No, you didn't.
No, we went to Comic-Con.
I was about to say, well, you and I both ended up at ECCC.
Yeah, went to Emerald City Comic-Con and had some fun, which was a lot of... just running around, poking people. Got some cool swag.
Yeah.
Brian's upset because Brian didn't get to go.
Actually, I got...
Lack of planning.
I got some... autographed books because Dammit went and stood in lines all day.
Oh, she got the Patrick Rothfuss signature, yeah?
She got me Stormfront autographed by Jim Butcher, and
nice.
She got me the first Patricia Briggs Mercy Thompson book signed.
Nice.
That's good.
Wait, you're still reading those?
I was only there for one day, so I didn't want to stand in line for almost anything.
Yeah.
The only thing I even vaguely stood in line for was I got into a room where they were doing a podcasting panel with a couple other podcasters local to the Seattle area.
You told me about this one.
Yeah. There wasn't a line, so I basically just walked in, sat down, and hung out. But that was interesting. That was one of the things I did. I got to meet the guys who make Least I Could Do, which is funny because every single time I have seen their booth at other cons, they haven't been at their booth when I went by. This time I walked by, and I was like, oh, holy shit, you're here. And he looks at me and goes, I'm here. And then the other guy comes
I exist.
If you're weird enough, he'll make a comic strip about you.
Right. Mm. So it was kind of cool, though, because they look exactly like they do in the damn comics when they depict themselves in the contails.
Contails.
Yeah.
We discovered I am possibly one of the worst people to go solo with to a convention because I'm worried about the crowd the whole time.
I could have told you that.
Well, shut up.
We did meet up with the Rev.
I was about to say, on my own, I was making my back to you, my fiance Savannah, Amber, everybody.
Yeah.
I ran into him coming up the other side of the convention. He's like, Justin! I was like, what? Who? Who are you? Hey! Like, it was good to run into people that I knew from the podcast or had interacted with. I ran into the guy who created Tiny Swords.
Yeah,
bought a copy of that off him. He was also surprised to see somebody from Digital and Dicer.
Right, right.
Scored some really awesome prints. There's a art book or two that I would recommend to everybody, and I forget the author's name, but it's called Tales from the Loop. It's actually an RPG setting that I might be looking into because it intrigues me. You should check it out and go on the internet.
We're talking about the Reverend in Fuego from 99.9 KISW Seattle Rock Radio Station, by the way.
He's a cool guy. He bought one of those like articulated infinity gauntlets.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I saw someone on the street who had one and took a photo of just the hand. I was like, you lose this?
When I saw him, he still had the foam one. Yep. And he fist bumped us with the foam one.
Mm-hmm. That was good times.
Yeah.
And killed half the universe.
Like you do.
Yeah.
Other than that, minor video games and reading stuff.
As a side note, if you want to know a little bit more about the Reverend, you want to hear him reading some fanfic, we did a two-part literal torture of playing Halo Reach?
Halo 5.
No, it was Halo Reach.
It
wasn't Halo 5 because Halo 5 doesn't do local multiplayer.
It was Reach.
Yeah, but we did some literal torture while playing some multiplayer, so definitely check that out if you want to see about,
also,
more about that.
Also, Bendy and the Ink Machine.
Red Halos in Space.
Yeah.
It's a bad one.
Yeah.
It's very
definitely check that out. Before we get to our main topic, just a couple quick announcey type things. We are going to be doing some more Literal Tortures coming up here soon. We are wrapping up Literal Torture Harry Potter, and that will be ending here within the next couple weeks.
So done with that.
We do have one slated for after that, but if anyone out there has some ideas or thoughts on what game with what fic we should do, definitely hit us up on our website, email, Discord, etc. So definitely let us know.
We are certainly open to suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Hazardous Endeavors is on point for continuing every Wednesday, so definitely stick with us for that.
Yay! Yep. I like that.
And we got some more Creature Pasta coming up here soon as well.
Yes.
Our Monday release schedule has been a little wonky lately, but we are going to be filling it with some content, so...
Mostly because Mark.
Mostly because me.
Yes.
The third episode of Doki Doki that we recorded still hasn't been released.
I told you to get on that.
Dude! Yeah, I know. Shit's been weird lately.
Don't leave the studio until it's complete.
You are condemned. You will live here now.
And on that note, let's go ahead and move on to our main topic. And this week's goes a little something like this.
Trusty sidekicks, game mechanics, and story conventions.
Yes, indeed. So today, we want to talk a little bit about kind of...
Your number two.
Yes, yeah.
Does number two work for?
Yeah, you tell it. So the idea of sidekicks in video games is something that has been around for a very long time, and they've been handled differently across multiple games, and also how they're handled in different role-playing games.
Yeah.
So there are the classic sidekicks that we see in most games, the not necessarily unplayable, but the ones that just hang around and don't do anything, like...
Your basic AI companions.
Right. Yeah. For example, if we go even back to, like, Sonic and Tails, mm-hmm. where Tails is flying around after you, and it doesn't interact with you in any meaningful way unless you're playing as him, which is another thing entirely, but... Then you get up into the idea of, like, the AI-controlled sidekicks and the...
I have a problem with this. You were just talking about Sonic, and I didn't hear enough scorn in your voice. I need you to say that statement again.
No,
but
Mark is a huge
scorn.
Sonic fan.
Oh, well, you can listen to our Sonic CD Literal Torture, and you can figure out how much scorn there is.
I have never met anyone that is more in love with the Sonic franchise than Mark.
That's
obviously, you haven't been on DeviantArt lately.
God. Anyway, so damn. I was on a roll. I had thoughts. I was like, I'm gonna just keep rolling with this, but
flip.
Yeah, fucking just gone.
Well, I mean, you've also got in a lot of your Rainbow Six shooters from the early days, your teammates were of course maybe considerable as sidekicks. You've got just about any group that you take with you in single-player campaigns has some interaction.
Yeah, and you can even consider certain party members in a lot of like JRPGs and such like that. It's kind of the sidekick or
your whole party
thing.
Yeah,
right. So you know they're seen in many different games, but I think kind of taking a little bit of a an analytical look at it and saying like, well, how do they get used? Why are they there in the first place?
Mules.
Like, would a game be just as good if it wasn't for these extra characters, gameplay-wise versus story-wise?
No, they're combat mules.
In some games, they absolutely are.
Yeah. Carry all this stuff I don't want to carry and hit that thing.
Ah, so you're talking about Bethesda sidekicks.
Yeah. Right. So let's actually go ahead and use that as our first example here. Okay. So the Fallout 4 specifically, and I think some of the earlier Fallout... Did Fallout 3 had sidekick type followers, right?
Yeah, because you had... Well, you've always got a companion.
Yeah.
In some capacity. A lot of the top-down games from earlier on, like Wasteland,
yeah,
had similar things. I think in Fallout 3, don't you? You basically always have a dog.
They were like mercs or something like that that you can get. Like, Fallout New Vegas had them as well. Like, yeah, there was always the capacity of having another character, like, being around you and helping you out in some regard.
Right.
Whether it be because they have a special skill set, whether they because like they take up the brunt of the damage while your character is more suited to stealthing.
Yeah,
things like
well,
that.
I mean, there's that, or there's the concept. They weren't forced upon you, though. In Fallout, you can always go without a companion, and that's the
right,
great part. I mean, that was definitely... It's not really a mechanic at that point.
Well, actually,
that's
where...
forced upon
that's
the
kind of what I'm looking at here. So, in using Fallout as an example, so the game in all... In almost every aspect can function without issue without having a companion or a sidekick of any kind.
Right.
The main character can go and do whatever they want and almost with very few exceptions without having to have the hangers-on, without having to have someone there.
Right.
But those hangers-on do have mechanics in and of themselves that allow you to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, it's a basic mechanic, like in Fallout, being able to give your sidekick some of your equipment to hold if you're carrying too much,
yeah,
or the idea that some of them might have skills that you don't. But the fact that they aren't forced upon you has them as almost more of a novelty than an actual requirement or even much of a mechanic that has to be used.
Well, okay, continuing with Fallout as an example, I don't think necessarily it's a novelty so much as an experience. Because in the Wasteland, I mean, everybody's going to approach the want to play a game set in the apocalypse differently. Some
sure,
people want the solo adventure. They
right,
want to feel the loneliness or other things that's entailed in that environment. Other people want a companion. It's more driven to a narrative, and there's different quest lines you can follow. So, I mean,
right,
it really depends on playstyle. I don't really think it's so much a gimmick as it is just a preference.
Right. And so the games that basically offer it as a thing you can do is interesting to me because it's something where people who are interested in the game for different reasons can either decide to use a companion or not have a companion based off their preference.
Right.
It's almost like, because I know the Dragon Age games, you could technically run around solo for a lot of the stuff. You don't have to bring a party with you, but they're there if you want to. And they add a lot of, like, atmosphere, they talk, they help through combat. But if you're playing an Arcane Knight, you don't actually have to have a party. You can solo your way through the entire game and not have to worry about any of it. It just makes combat go faster if you have
right,
a party there. A
lot faster.
So, you know, games that offer them but aren't required are interesting to me, if only because those are there for story purposes almost entirely, and and they are there as a gameplay aid, but not as a core mechanic of what makes the game useful.
Secret of Mana is one where it is flat out part of the core mechanic.
You cannot play without those companions.
To bring it forward more, Ghost Recon Wildlands. If you don't have four players with you, then you do have a team of four. The other three are made up of AI because it is a core aspect of the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say when it comes to those, that is kind of bridging the gap between the required companions and not, because if you are not using them, they are AI controlled. And the reason why those are... Like, the game says you must have this many people, you know, you must have this many people to play.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you do not have them, we're going to control it for you, because either in Secret of Mana, the game would be too hard if you were just alone, because you don't have the damage output or the other abilities needed to continue playing. In Ghost Recon Wildlands, I'm sure that having those extra characters there, in some cases, is handy to draw fire.
They can mystically see people through many, many miles of bush.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that in and of itself is its own issue with companions that are AI-controlled, because they are... it's like having those DM NPCs running mm-hmm. around, that they know what is happening more than any of the players have any possibility of doing so,
right.
and thus can make decisions based off information the party doesn't have.
DM NPCs.
Right.
Scum.
So the idea of having games where... Because in essence, what those are, I still put those kind of in the category of they are gameplay aids, because yeah. the core mechanic of Ghost Recon Wildlands is you're running around shooting stuff and doing these things, right? Like you're
as a team.
The controls don't do much for you though, right? Like
no.
you can tell your party, you can tell your group to do stuff, yeah. Like you can say go to that point,
yeah,
take
yeah.
this thing, and that inches it closer to that. The Secret of Mana side of it, where you're able to basically, like, you can control them limited. Like, I want you to cast a spell, and then you go back to controlling your normal party member. You know, so in and of it, like I said, that's kind of bridging the gap between something that isn't required at all and something you have limited control over. I am gesticulating, you motherfuckers. Yes, I am.
It's so big, though. It's so big, and grandiose gesticulation.
You're hiding behind the monitor so no one can see that you are, like, the talkiest hands in the universe.
Yes.
You made Italian hands at least twice.
Yeah. Your companions, yeah. Okay, anyway.
That was an awful Italian accent.
It wasn't an Italian.
That was
Il Compagnone.
Il Compagnone, yeah.
No, that's
not.
Oh, that was worse.
I don't do accents.
I led you down a horrible path.
So, God damn it.
And you followed near blindly.
It's true. Oh. I did. It's what I do. So, the
it's
other
okay.
side of this is the... The sidekicks
well,
and the companion characters that are included
yeah.
as a core mechanic in and of themselves, and these ones are, the game wouldn't function without these characters. And those are ones that are, for example, as much as you might hate it, Navi or Fi from the Legend of Zelda series,
uh-huh.
where Navi is not only a tutorial character and a tutorial sidekick that teaches you how to do stuff, but is also the lock-on mechanic. You know, the reason why you're able to lock on is that Navi is circling something and then it provides it. It gives a storyline reason why the mechanic is there.
And, of course, the most core mechanic of Legend of Zelda
hey,
is
listen.
Jenna.
Right.
Hey,
Jenna yes. is at the core of every Legend of Zelda game.
Yes, obviously. That merchant girl.
So,
yes.
the Navi and Fi from Legend of Zelda, Cappy from Mario Odyssey,
uh-huh.
is another example of the game couldn't function as it is without that character there.
Really awkward if Mario threw himself at things.
Right, yeah, just kind of like, or his head.
Admittedly, you know, with how he jumps, it's almost like he is throwing himself at everything.
Well, I don't know about you, but when I jump at a thing, I ballistically throw myself at it.
Right.
You don't jump like Mario. I've seen you jump. You don't jump like Mario.
And... Then you have games...
Jump on your head.
Right. Sign or Sane from Ori and the Blind Forest, where
yeah.
that is your attack mechanic. It literally is your weapon that is your combat like mechanic. Is an actual companion that you get very early on and then kind of acts as a tutorial through most of the game as well. So these are companions that are hard-coded into the game, not so much as a, without this, the game is too, like, you can't beat the boss or whatever. It's more like, without this, there is no game. So that makes sense?
You cannot
yeah, no, it
do
makes sense.
Things.
Right. You don't have a
You'd
way
be
of...
prohibited from moving forward if you didn't have this ability.
Yeah, there's no way of interacting with the game without
Plus,
this companion.
Core mechanic.
Right, right.
Core mechanic, waving hands and doing things and... Yeah.
Stop mentioning it. Just let it happen.
Right. So... The other side of this, of course, that I wanted to get into is kind of how this affects, say, like Dungeons and Dragons when it
right.
comes to companions and, like, what is a companion or a sidekick and how can you include them into either a game you're trying to make or a D&D game you're trying to run.
Sounds like you're talking about Gilligans.
Yeah, go
Gilligans.
Ahead. You know, move on. Yeah, go.
You know, when your group adopts an NPC... They find themselves a Gilligan, a little guy that is a great plot device for GMs to hold hostage and capture and possibly maim.
Right.
But also is not strategically efficient enough to be that large of a boon to your party.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, you know, picking up the random NPC and having them tag along for your... you know, for the extent of wherever they're supposed to be there for, is certainly one way to go about it, and having the DM controlling it. And again, this is where we get into that area of a DM-run NPC that is traveling with the party for extended periods of time.
Should never be more powerful than the party.
So do you handle your followers or your companions as NPCs of their own? Like, when a player has a few of their own, do you handle them as tools, or do you handle them as played things?
It gets very dependent on the group. So I've been in games that are like one or two people, sometimes three people that have kind of the NPC assistants that are there to basically fill the gaps that the players don't.
Yeah.
When your group says, I want to be a wizard, I want to be a fighter, and I want to be a rogue, and they decide they're not going to have a cleric with them, having that NPC coming along with them sometimes is, you know, the only way they're going to survive the challenges you throw at them.
Bullshit. Right. Bard can do all the healing.
Right, but one of them didn't want to be a bard, so there you go. And the idea of, you know, you throw them into something where none of the characters have any ability to heal, but they're gonna need it to live, so you throw one in there and say, guess what, you have an NPC coming with you.
So a bard.
That, at that point, that functions more like the Ghost Recon or the Secret of Mana, and this is an NPC that will come along and do things for you that you can't do, to make sure that you're able to survive the things that are happening.
A necessary assist.
Right. And with the caveat there is that the GM has full control over what their actions are, when they're going to act, how they're going to act, you know, with the full expectation that the players may have that, well, if the GM says, GM NPC says, hey, I have this idea, why don't we go do this thing? And then the players go, the GM just told us to go do this thing, as opposed to the party cleric has an idea.
Right. Well, and I think that those are different than having a proper follower, or like if you'd taken the leadership feat in 3.5 or Pathfinder,
yeah.
Where you get followers who are your, who are the player's subordinates, but you also have one cohort that is like an actual competent, albeit two levels below.
Yeah,
their,
at maximum can be two levels lower than the actual party member himself. So, and that again comes into the idea of they are still a person, they're still a character, they're still under the DM's control over what they do and don't do, because yes, they are loyal to that player character, but not to the point where you can say, hey, walk off that cliff, and they're just going to go do it.
I mean, if your leadership stats are high enough, they with Pathfinder, you can almost
It's not a follower anymore, that's a cultist.
Right. And which, funny enough, the leadership feat works really well for having a cult.
Yeah!
You know, so this is an interesting part because they're not a gameplay mechanic when you're talking about the leadership feat. And 5th edition has something like it, by the way.
Does it?
The noble has an optional background feature where instead of having the ability to be welcomed into noble circles and
they have a squire. It's from the knight.
No. The noble has an attaché of up to 3 NPCs of commoner class that basically run around and do shit for them. The knight one has a squire. Yes.
And they, but that's not like a squire who goes and fights. It is a squire that just goes and like fixes your armor.
Manservants.
Right. Yeah.
Gets you the breastplate stretcher.
Sets up your camp for you. Goes out, brushes your
ties
horse
the
down,
armpit
you know,
straps.
Takes care of it. Gets you your beer at the inn. All these things that basically a squire would do. That would, you know, that makes it easier. And it's kind of a role playing thing rather
like
than any sort of
how to talk
like from actual. You know, mechanic, I would say.
I feel like he's learned how to talk by watching nerds rave at, like, the Sakura Con.
The Sakura Con.
The Sakura Con.
Yeah, you right. go down there.
The Sakura Con.
Yeah. Do we need to get you some glow sticks?
Do you also listen to them new songs like that Despacita?
Yeah, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Well, what's that? That the sandstorm?
the rude one, you know.
We interrupt your podcast by yelling Darude Sandstorm.
At this point, half of the people watching have turned it off. Half of the people listening have regretted downloading the episode. So, unsubscribe 2 stars.
It's all good. Most premium.
You make a valid point, though, Brian, when it comes to a sidekick being like a cohort in the idea that they are less powerful than the main character, which is kind of a hallmark of what a sidekick is. Batman and Robin. Robin is not on the level of Batman and thus is a sidekick. You know, the classic hero, like, superhero dynamic of having the main hero and the sidekick that is used in shtick and everything from, you know, My Hero Academia to almost every superhero role playing out there. You know, almost every comic has something very similar to the idea of a sidekick. And part of that is that the sidekick is generally less powerful than the person they're tagging along with.
Well, I mean, some of those examples you've just given are the inability to write supporting characters.
Right.
I have to lay all this on one other person because I can't write 5 other people into this story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A fun example of something very similar to that is the mechanic of the Palicos in Monster Hunter World.
Okay, have you figured out if you can capture one yet?
You can't... Oh, you can kind... Okay. So,
like, there is some
time. There are wild palicos, but they just come around and hang out with you and help you.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they're just hanging out, and you just show up and be like, hey, and they're like, meow, and they help you.
So they're not like the cats in Assassin's Creed Origins?
No.
Oh, I made the worst mistake the other day.
What have you done?
No, actually, not the other day. It was a couple days into playing
it. Is this relevant to our conversation?
Not at all, but I'm going to go with it anyway. you pet them after a little while as you're crouching, and I thought you had to push a button.
So
you're sitting there, and I push the punch button, which is also interact.
Okay.
And you just punch the cat dead.
You just fucking punch the cat.
It was the one moment I've had in video games that actually make me go, and I just sat frozen. I was like, what? Oh, God.
In the chat, Kingslayer, have you met the Gajalika yet? They throw Mialatov cocktails at you. Oh, that's great. Thanks for that. But yeah, nice. So the concept of the Palicos in Monster Hunter is an idea of a sidekick that is nowhere near as powerful as the person they're following around, but are there in a supportive...
They like to push things off of shelves and look at you funny.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But they also heal you, or they can pull aggro, or sometimes they'll turn around and Frigg has a tiny ballista with paw prints on it and is shooting the monster. You know, weird little things like that.
You named it Frigg.
I named it Frigg, and it looks like Frigg, and it's adorable.
I named my Palico Andy, and it looks like Andy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Palicos, they're the greatest thing in that game. But the game functions fine without them. It's like you when you're running around with a group and you know your Palicos aren't around, the game still plays and you can run around and do stuff and everything's fine. And they're there as a support character. And whether you're making a video game or whether you're making whether you have a character in a role-playing game that has a sidekick, the things to kind of keep in mind are how important are they to the mechanics of your game and how important are they to the storyline of your game, because those are very important questions to ask.
How much emotional investment can you actually give it is, I think, the biggest key to this whole
thing. Is this companion and basically an ongoing escort quest that you can't get away from? You know, and that's like Ashley from Resident Evil 4. You know, where the game forces you into situations where if you don't take care of this character, you will lose.
Oh, God. I just remembered what you're talking about.
Right, yeah.
Oh, the president's daughter is the worst.
Yeah, and the only reason why she's ever even, like, remotely interesting to have around is when you have the alternate costume when she's in a full suit of plate mail. She's unkillable, and people can't carry her away because she's too heavy. So you just see cultists, like, pick her up and then fall over. So, right. So when you don't have to worry about her getting taken or killed is the only time she's actually worthwhile.
Sure.
But at that point, she is a mechanic to basically require you split your attention between solving puzzle / kill enemy and make sure she doesn't die or get kidnapped.
Well, yeah, I mean, it forces you to
throw her in a dumpster every so often while you're killing a bunch of people. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
But
I guess that makes sense, yeah.
No, it totally does.
Right. So if you're going to be making a video game that requires you to have a companion character, are they a companion character that you are responsible for? I have not played The Last of Us. Have you?
No.
Oh, neither of you guys have.
It's on my to-do list. That and the 400 games in my Steam library I haven't touched.
Right, and the companion character in The Last of Us, the young girl, you know, is playable for a small amount of missions, but
no,
for
the
most
part, there's
a
whole expansion that you play as her.
Right, there you go. Yeah. But for a lot of it, it's basically just palling around with you and is controlled by the AI. Another version would be, say, Ratchet and Clank, where Clank is someone who's played on specific missions, but otherwise just hangs out with you and doesn't do much. So at that point, when you're coming up with this idea and you're like, okay, I want to have this extra character. I want to have a support character that's going to do something for my main character. How important is it? Another good example of mechanic that is required is Super Mario Sunshine, where you have the flood unit on the back of Mario. You remember that?
Either none of us played Super Mario Sunshine.
You're bringing up these games, I have no interaction with them.
In Super Mario Sunshine, one of the core mechanics is that Mario has a backpack that is basically sprays water and can be used as a little bit of a jetpack. So it's kind of required for the majority of the game to go.
Because it was a Luigi game.
Oh, the vacuum is not really.
Okay.
Yeah. If anything, the only sidekick type character is the doctor that is more of a tutorial and mission giver, but that isn't, I wouldn't even consider that a sidekick for the most part. Pikmin is another good example of a sidekick, quote unquote, that is a core gameplay mechanic. There would not be a game if Pikmin weren't there.
Okay.
So using these examples and kind of thinking, okay, well, how can I figure that into my game? Or in our case, your D&D game. So let's take the last few minutes here to talk about the leadership feat and NPC cohort / sidekicks in D&D.
Have at it.
So I hate them for the most part.
Why?
Because you forget them.
I forget them all the fucking time. I hate running them. The times that I have had them as a character, I keep track of them myself because I hate piling that amount of work because what you're basically telling a DM every time you take the leadership,
I need you to roleplay these three people.
Yes. All the time.
Yep.
Through everything. Yeah, pow, pow, as I hit the table. I know. I'm emphasizing with my current gestures.
Stop emphasizing. Your emphasis is well known.
Yes. So the... And whether you consider it a minion or a sidekick, the idea of the DM must roleplay this character basically from now until that character dies or is sent away is... You're providing the party with this extra person. So let's say you take the leadership feat in Pathfinder or 3.5.
Yeah.
You're going to have a character running around with the group that is two levels lower, which when you think about that, if your characters are level 15, that's still a 13th level cohort you're running around with.
And that's pretty badass.
Yeah, that your cohort can go destroy towns by themselves without breaking a sweat. It's still very powerful. And when you get... Because the minimum level you have to be to get that feat is like 6th level, 7th level? 5th level?
5th level, I think, in Pathfinder.
I thought I raised it to 6th or 7th in Pathfinder. Might be 7th. Either way, fact check us later.
Okay.
But the concept of you're now not only... You know, all four of your party members, right? Every single one of them takes the leadership feat. You are now running around with a group of 8 people. 4 of which, sure, are lower level, but that's still twice the amount of damage output and other ability. Thank you, Draconic, in the chat, 6th level. Thank you. But the idea, that's double the amount of firepower you're throwing out there. If you're an 8th level character, or even a 7th level character, your cohort can have fireball. You know, they can room clear, and it's just an entire next spell list that you're not having to keep track of, or that, you know, you have a fifth level fighter running around with full everything. It basically takes all of the balancing that a DM has to do to make an encounter, just throws it out the window and says, I am now having to double up on monsters, having to double up on weird things. They have to worry about their traps being completely made worthless because, oh, I just send one of my numerous first level followers, you know, down this way.
Walk down this hallway.
Because I intimidate them via, you know, fear rather than loyalty.
Weren't you the one wall that spears. Summoned a whole, bunch of minions to run down a hallway full of mine traps?
No, but one of my players did.
No, I could have sworn that was that. I could have sworn that was you in Look,
he
Kevin's
denies
campaign.
There's a difference between summoned monsters and cohorts and followers. Summoned monsters do your bidding because they're bound by magic. Leadership feat means these people are flocking to you because you're a charismatic individual.
He denies nuking schools from orbit. He denies burning.
I did
down
not
hospitals.
Deny them.
They're now denying that you send
it was
hapless
a hospital,
minions down,
and they were not. They were Earthshaker cannons, not orbit.
Okay, fine. I mean, it's basically the same thing.
That hospital had it coming.
No, it didn't.
It did.
It did not.
It was full of chaos.
But what about the orphanage?
Like, but this
also had it coming.
You see, you're straying away from the fact that you send countless numbers of people to their death for your own benefit.
Right. But if you take the leadership feat, part of the whole point of having it is to have a private army. Okay. So, basically, if the DM allows the leadership feat to be taken, you're basically opening up your game and saying, I guess I'm going to throw balance out the window and allow my players to have, you know, extra player characters, you know. And personally, as a DM, I hate it when it happens. And honestly, there are some good ways it can happen. Mm-hmm. Because think about the idea of animal companions. So the idea of having your own built-in sidekick with your class. Wizard familiars are another example.
Sure.
The animal companions for either rangers or, I believe, druids. There's a version of a druid, I believe, gets an animal companion. Oh. I know Pathfinder druids get animal companions. Yeah. So the concept of having...
Well, you gotta give rangers something in 5th edition.
Right, yeah. And so the idea of, like,
a crossbow and a spoon.
If I'm DMing and a player has a companion like that, I prefer that they make all the decisions and choices and roleplay for those things.
Sure.
Because I just don't want to deal with it. I'm roleplaying the rest of the goddamn world. I don't have time to 24/7 roleplay your damn wolf. I mean, maybe that's a little weird for some DMs out there, but that's just kind of where I sit personally. So the idea of using them as a core mechanic, though, and this is where you get into the idea of, say, you want to include a sidekick into a D&D game that is required to be there for the game to continue. Someone who maybe has to be escorted, someone has to be kept alive to get through certain areas. Whether it can be a specialty NPC that has a particular power that is required to say, like, I don't know, this person naturally gives off a zone of calm, so you drag them into the abyss with you so you don't all immediately go insane.
The other way that you can look at it, using companion rules and then using them alongside mass combat rules to do military games, where you've got a campaign where they're leaders of a small army.
And using that as, like, the core of your game is going to be, I have this army and I'm going to fight other armies with them. Sure, having companions and having them have all of these NPCs that are at their beck and call makes sense for your story to continue and makes sense for that type of game to actually be played.
Right. I don't know. I just... Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's all good.
Well, okay, think, for example, if you were doing, say, like, a modern day, like, Rainbow Six type game where each player is not just a member of one fire team, but they are all leaders of their own.
So you're talking about doing like platoon level as opposed to, okay.
One thing is in the Warhammer 40K game, Only War,
right.
You actually play as a trooper and his companion.
Okay.
Every single player actually has two characters. One of the characters is only a support gunner that runs around after him.
Yeah,
sure.
Oh, wow. Everyone's so kind.
Just keep moving.
Okay. But every player ends up having their own cohort to carry their weapons,
right.
Assist with operation of heavy weapons, or just be an extra rifle.
Right, which is very much a requirement when a heavy weapon requires at least a two-man team, and you don't want one player to sit there during combat going, what do you do on your action? I feed the ammunition belt. What do you do next turn? I feed the ammunition belt. What do you do next turn? Guess what? I feed the ammunition belt. Yeah. It would make for really boring gameplay, so having a sidekick or a cohort in that makes a lot of sense.
If you had some pretty epic narration going on, that wouldn't be so boring.
Right. It's like, oh, I could see that too. You could be there like, okay, what are you doing? It's like, okay, I beat in on the enemy and I let loose a salvo of automatic fire. Okay, well, what do you do? I stand there. I'm glaring out at the enemy forces. My hands chalky with the dust of this alien world. My brow knit and furrowed against the blazing alien sun. I reach down. I grab my equipment. I slowly raise it to the level of the side of the gun. I then feed the ammunition belt.
The whole time.
I whisper under my breath, feel the Emperor's wrath, Xenos filth, as I do so. Which takes five times as long to explain than I take a shot at the enemy. You can make it super interesting.
No, you see, that's the type of game I want to play in. I want that type of dedication from my players.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, you get to an interesting point, though, of when you have a player playing as the cohort to another player. You know, when you have someone be a squire to another character, you know, that sometimes could be more, you know, as effective or more effective than the person they're squiring for because of their decisions, their role-playing, and what they do.
Mm.
And there's a lot of really neat ways you can handle it. Yeah. One way I had thought about it for a while, and I have a character that I would love to play again at some point.
God damn it, I know.
I love this character concept. And
fucking ridiculous. Sir Titus?
Sir Titus and Aaron, yeah.
Fuck.
Is this like a Master Blaster setup?
No. Okay. So I had a character concept for a while. I wanted to play a Don Quixote-style questing knight. Like, sure. Big mustache, shining armor, like old
completely
dude, right?
Insane.
Right, like, yeah. I'm going to do this thing, and like, I'm going to charge off headfirst into the enemy every time, right? And he had a squire named Aaron who sat back and was very quiet, very reserved, who didn't do much except for setting up camp, taking care of everything, and had a crossbow and did his own thing.
Yeah.
And I would play both characters. Really easy to do, sure. Because Sir Titus was very up in your face and Aaron barely said anything. This worked because of how it was as a class. Aaron is a summoner in Pathfinder.
Yeah.
Sir Titus is his eidolon. He's basically, Aaron is living out his hero fantasies with an immortal questing knight that any time he dies, he just disappears and can be resummoned. So Sir Titus gets smished by an enemy, and then suddenly,
smished.
Like, literally, like a giant, like a Tarrasque could step on him, and then 5 minutes later, Sir Titus comes running in from the bushes like, ha ha, the beast kicked me over the horizon, I'm back! Because he can just be resummoned.
Yeah, no, okay.
And Aaron had so much crippling social anxiety, he never wanted to say or do anything. He never thought he could be the hero, so he made his imaginary friend and uses ventriloquism and a hat of disguise to
some
make
sort
his...
of weird third or second man syndrome.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So no, the whole concept is I played his eidolon, which was just him acting out his fantasies. So whenever he made up the tent for the night, he would go in there and he'd do all of the work so that Sir Titus got all of the accolades. He got to go to the nice dinners. And because you can sense things through your eidolon, Aaron got to eat the nice food. He got to drink the good drink. Because he could sense everything the eidolon could, but he would be sitting back with the servants, you know, eating crappy food or whatever, and living out this life. So, as a concept, I was my own cohort, because my companion was what was doing all the talking.
You were your own imaginary friend.
Yes.
Yes, he was.
I really enjoyed it, you know, for the two or three times I got to play it.
A different way this could be handled is if you made a chart. Right? Yeah. Of everything that your character may, your second character may need to say. For any situation. And you just rolled a dice to see what he said on his turn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And people would directly ask Aaron things like, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
No, roll a dice.
You know, it's like,
I see a person on the hill.
Don't bother my squire.
There's a snake in my boots.
Oh, sorry. Don't bother my squire.
Squire.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. We had a very, very, almost, I wouldn't quite
don't. Say Aaron, get me my S-word.
Don't tell me you don't do accents. You try. Right. You try.
I certainly try. But
you should hear his dwarven accent.
Let's hear your dwarven accent.
Nope.
Yeah, come on. Give us your dwarven accent.
My throat actually can't handle it right now.
Oh, come
on. That is such
a load. I'm saving myself from recording Hazardous Endeavors on Monday.
Oh.
Bullshit.
No, seriously. Voicing the bad guy when I had a sore throat almost killed my voice, and I basically ended the last session almost like, okay, now we're done.
Okay, so this was a great game.
Yeah.
See you on
it's
next
okay.
Week.
You don't need to talk in your job anymore.
That's fair.
It's true.
So when you're talking about a game mechanic and having a sidekick or a cohort, you know, whether it's in your role-playing game or whether it's in your video game, there's a ton of different ways to handle it. Yeah. There's a ton of ways to make it interesting. I think I like it more when it is a requirement for the game that they exist and that the character justifies a mechanic rather than is, well, you can take them along if you want, otherwise they're just dead air.
Yeah.
Because having Preston Garvey running around after you complaining that a settlement needs
There's
your attention.
There's another settlement that needs your assistance.
Right. Is annoying, and I don't care because Dogmeat does everything he does better and is cuter.
Better.
Yeah.
Dogmeat is 100% better than Preston Garvey.
You don't want to seek the milk of human kindness?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Oh, yeah. But that guy's great.
He is.
Right. So, overall, though, you know, use it how you want to use it, but remember that if you're a character wanting to use a leadership feat, talk to your DM. I believe in some editions it even says specifically DM.
Talk to your DM.
Yeah. GMs actually are, like, you have to get their approval before taking the feat because of how much it can really fuck with a game.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there are cool ways to actually work with it. So, I think that's about as much as we got on this one, unless you guys have something you want to tailor
on. I have nothing else to add.
No, I think we sort of covered bases on this.
Neat. Hey, no, tell us what you think. Hit us up with that.
Brian, another settlement needs your help.
No, right. No. You know what? I put up so many gosh darn turrets on every single sediment. No one needs help.
That's fair.
Sediment.
Turrets on the sediments. And moving on, we have some responses to some of our questions from the Twitfaith Mail Tumble Site Plus, starting with a response from Frosty the Wandering Monster answering the question from episode 137, which went a little something like this.
When were you in on it?
Yes, indeed. Brian, you want to hit this?
No,
or no, Justin, you got this. Go.
When I was in on it, actually the whole gaming group ended up being in on it.
Yes, it's in caps. You don't have to yell it.
No, yeah, he does.
No, he does not.
It's okay. We had gotten a little tired of our AD&D first edition game, and I started up a 1E Gamma World game. After about 3 or 4 months of playing, we achieved our objective of penetrating a spaceport and abducting a maroon spacer to take us off world.
Nice.
That transitioned into a Star Frontiers game. Unfortunately, Star Frontiers degraded into one of the most greedy, self-centered, backstabbing games I was ever involved in. Even worse than the worst game of diplomacy ever. To get everyone back into a proper frame of mind, to cooperate with each other and not keep killing each other, the GM had one player get infected by and taken over by The Thing from the 1982 movie by John Carpenter. Nice. The player then had to take over everyone else so that... Oh, God. So then we were all the same organism and couldn't hurt our collective selves. It got much better after that. That is twisted and an excellent way to handle that problem.
That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
I like that. It's good. Well, we also have responses to show number 138... which went a little like this.
Where do you get your power?
Really? That's it? Oh, come on.
Where do you get your power?
Where do you get your power?
Where do you get your power?
The Ben person. I get my power from the tears of Peyton and Eli Manning. That is all.
In a world where you get your power from power things, the Ben person gets his power from the tears of Peyton and Eli Manning.
Which is a absolutely respectable thing for any Seahawk fan to do.
That is true.
What is today's question?
Today's question goes a little something... No, we actually have responses. No, we're doing responses from episode 139, which went a little something like this.
When did you game in public?
Desmond says...
Hi, Desmond.
Aside from all the obvious activities, I was part of an RP group that played at a Denny's for a while. That poor waitstaff was not ready.
You are not prepared!
You need to order more than just coffee.
That's okay, Denny's serves beer.
Also true.
Oh, yeah, but you don't want to. Moriarty from Crymore Gaming. I used to play for the CPL, the Cyber Athlete Professional League, or Coastal Plain League for Minor League Baseball.
Yeah, when the direct response was, I used to play for the CPL, period. And I didn't know what that was, so I had to look it up. And I'm like, oh, it's the Coastal Plain League for Minor League Baseball. And then I was like, wait. No, he probably meant the Cyber Athlete Professional League. Also, for a response in the chat, yes, Sabine from Star Wars Rebels is a Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Yep, she's a cool. Mando.
Yeah. Thanks for the chat. You know, it's just completely on its own thing. So, you know, cheers. more responses.
Kingslayer?
Yes.
Just when I played sports, that's about it, if that counts.
Mm. No, it counts.
Yeah.
That is playing and in public.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair.
Draconic, my eighth grade year. The D&D group I played with didn't have anywhere to play, so we decided to reserve a study room at the public library. Even though the room was supposedly soundproof, it didn't take long before we were asked to leave because the profanity is not allowed.
Aww.
And because apparently we couldn't bring any drinks in.
Aww,
I looked the librarian dead in the eyes and chugged my Coke before we left.
You fucking rebel.
And everyone else I was playing with was pretty much equally obnoxious when we left. Needless to say, we didn't come back. Probably my favorite public gaming story, even though I was an immature little brat back then.
It's still pretty grand.
Hmm.
Luckily around here we have, I think, what, 3 gaming stores that have enough room for people to play D&D?
And at least half a library.
Yeah.
And also, the one that doesn't have enough room to play D&D just goes and plays in the mall.
Yeah, also true. Let's see. Go ahead, next one.
Moral truth. When I was younger, I would go to Target, Walmart, Toys R Us, any place you can name where they have those kiosks for PS4, Xbox, Wii, etc. You know, when you're a kid, you go and you go to the video games department to play whatever they have plugged into the TV.
Yeah, well, when I used to work at the software, etc., i.e. what ended up becoming a GameStop.
You can't keep playing that
right.
machine.
People would drop their... They'd walk by and they'd be like, okay, go ahead and hang out in the game store while mommy and daddy shop. And their kid would come in and plant themselves in front of the game key, like the demo games. And I'd be like, get the fuck out of my store and find your parents. We are not a daycare. You can't just sit there and stare at the games all day.
Mark, you shouldn't talk to children like that.
I didn't fucking care.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. They're going to learn
not.
It in school.
More specifically, when we got to the point where parents would walk by and they'd be like, go ahead and go in there, and be like, excuse me, no. Please take your children with you. We are not responsible for them.
There's a reason the store doesn't exist anymore.
GameStop still exists.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's
totally
only
does.
Worth $6.
So about as much as they give you for your entire stack of games?
Yeah, the whole company. Only worth $6.
Response from Uber Madface. Lily says, in high school, I TA'd for the A+ cert class. There was another class in the same room, so there was a divider wall between the groups, so the other class would keep out of the A+ cert areas, which made it pretty easy to slack off and play games. All we would do is build new computers and play the Dota mod for Warcraft 3 on.
Nice.
Nice. Yeah.
Nice.
Good times.
Yes.
He's good. Yeah. He's good. I like.
Reminds me of spending my entire junior and senior year playing Counter-Strike in the AV room.
I don't remember any of these things because I left high school early.
That's fair.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have another question for
another
all of you wonderful
you
people out there. Yes, indeed. And this one goes a little something. This.
Are you okay?
No.
Okay. Are you okay?
How many fingers am I holding up?
4 and a thumb.
Well, they.
Well, I mean, it's a digit. Right. Who is your favorite sidekick?
You're a digit.
Well, I have digits.
Anyway, yes. Who is your favorite sidekick? We want to know who your favorite sidekick is.
There's only one answer, and his name is Preston Garvey.
Disagree. No. It's terrible.
Disagree strongly.
Okay.
Because, obviously, the best sidekick in the entire universe is
Preston
the Iron
Garvey.
Fucking Bull.
Yep, there you go.
Bam.
Don't pound the table.
I'm gonna pound the table.
I pound the table for emphasis, not you.
No, neither of you pound the table anymore.
We are all going to pound the table.
We're professionals, damn it.
Anyways, the Iron Fucking Bull is the best from Dragon Age Inquisition. Seriously.
It's decidedly difficult to argue against, yeah.
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 Who sent you there? That's right. The Iron Fucking Bull.
Right. Why didn't you just call yourself the Iron Dragon?
Shit.
Let's see.
Preston Garvey.
Fucking Preston Garvey.
Yep.
I'm going to go with, just because Darby. It's the one that immediately popped into my mind as I was writing the question, Boo.
Boo?
The giant miniature space hamster.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Minsk's tiny little hamster pet that sat in his inventory in Baldur's Gate, you couldn't get rid of, and would squeak every time you clicked it.
Go for the eyes, Boo!
Yes, exactly.
Nice.
So, yes, Digidicers, we want to know once again from you the answer to this question, which is...
Who is your favorite sidekick?
Preston Garvey.
Not Preston Garvey.
It doesn't have to be Preston Garvey.
It really shouldn't
why
be Preston
Garvey. Why is Preston Garvey your favorite sidekick?
Just why. Just not, why? Not who, why. Why is he your favorite?
Are you okay?
Well, first off, let's go ahead and wrap us up with some shout-outs here. I want to go ahead and give a shout-out to our absolutely wondrous patrons.
Patrons.
Yes, Astonishing Legends, The Golden Bolt Game Reviews, and Odd Shape Channel. We want to thank you for being our wondrous patrons. Whee! And if you would like to be listed at the end of our show, to be shouted out at the end of every single podcast, all you got to do is head over to that Patreon. Donate Patreon. $1 a month if you want to. I mean, that's
a single dollar.
Or anything above and beyond that. We appreciate any and all amounts. It helps us make this show what it is and helps us improve it as we go along.
Helps get us all voice coaching so we don't say things like helps is makes us show.
Helps is makes us show.
Helps is makes us.
Yes, indeed.
Show makes
it happens. It helps us.
But for all of you, we want to thank you for joining us this week. You can keep in touch with us at our website and our various social networking sites.
You can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/digitalanddice.
Also, check us out on Tumblr at digitalanddice.tumblr.com.
For email and Google Plus, you can find us at digitalanddice@gmail.com.
And you can follow at Digital and Dice on Twitter. Tweet, tweet.
Donate to your favorite podcast on the internet by visiting patreon.com/digitalanddice. That's
patreon.com/digitalanddice. Check out our website at www.digitalanddice.com to check up and catch up with our YouTube and Twitch channels.
I would also like to point out, though, that if you want to listen to any of the... podcast versions of several of our shows and you
Creature
do not
Pasta.
Have access to iTunes, you can find all of those on our website. You can find the Digital and Dice podcast live on the main page. You can find Hazardous Endeavors and Creature Pasta on their respective show pages as well. All released episodes are available there as soon as they go live.
Yes, indeed. And take a moment to leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you found us. It really helps to get the show to as many of you fantastic people as possible.
We're going to leave you now with The Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker, All I Want for Christmas is Grandma's Sweet Elixir Soup by Ridiculously Garrett to keep you entertained until next week when we return with more news, rants, opinions, and general internet loot.
But never fear, we shall return.
Until then, game on, internet!